Ready for the latest news about digital books and authors, as well as digital publishing trends? It's time to get up to speed in digital media news with your hosts, Quinn Barrett and T.J. Hume.
Greetings, book lovers. Welcome to the Up to Speed in Digital Media News podcast. I'm Quinn Barrett, founder of Wise Bear Media and author of the novel Invisible Snow, as well as recently released Digital Publishing Profits. It's Friday, September 27th. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, T.J. Hume. Hi, T.J.
Hi, Quinn. We sure have a lot of great stories to talk about this week.
We do. And I want to get to those stories right away, but I just want to give one quick reminder about our Wise Bear Digital Book Award competition that is, well, I should say more of, it is kind of a merit-based competition, but there is category distinction competition as well. So our second annual Wise Bear Digital Book Awards is just started on September 15th. And so all that information is available online at wisebearmedia.com/awards. You can get all the information. You're welcome to email us with any questions you may have about it if you're a publisher, which seems like we get a lot of publishers who like to get their independent authors into this, into our evaluation and competition. So anyway, we look forward to receiving more entries. Anyway, okay, let's get to the stories compiled from our weekly digital digest. And remember, you can follow along with our discussion by referencing today's post at wisebearmedia.com, and or you can always read them independently or at your convenience. I have a number of author associations where they like to download our podcast and listen to it so as they walk later in their whatever their exercise routine is. But one way or another, we always stress it's very important to become a student of the digital publishing industry and to really stay up with all the developments that are changing so quickly day to day, week to week. So it's part of our job as published authors to be vigilant in our awareness about, marketing and other things within digital publishing that will ultimately help us all to be more successful in selling our books. Okay. Can you go ahead and start us off with I know what story you're going to gravitate to, I can guess, so go ahead.
Yeah, the one I want to just start off with is the CNET article about how Amazon has unveiled this week three new Kindle Fire tablets, and they're not yet available, but they are. You can pre-order them on Amazon.com. So, being an Amazon subscriber, you know, I was surprised in my inbox a few days ago to see that Jeff Bezos was announcing this, because I just forgot. It should have been something I was expecting, but every year they do come out with a new version of the Kindle, it seems. So I think what took me by surprise is they have three new types. One of them is pretty much the same as the previous Kindle Fire HD, but it has a lot lower price. They used to sell it for $199. This new model, I think, starts at $139. So it's a little bite to somebody who just purchased one. But the other two models are the HDX, which is a high-resolution screen, just a little better quality, and they've got a 7-inch and an 8.9-inch version of them. So what did you think of that?
Well, it seems like they're trying to get on the same development cycle that Apple's on. And
yes.
I agree with you. I had kind of forgotten about them, but we've all been, you know, we're always looking for the latest release on, you know, the iPhone 5S and 5C came out. I was thinking all about that, and I'm like, what? Kindle's coming out? So they're really trying to establish themselves more in the development space as a tablet developer, not just strictly an e-reading company. And eventually, we've said this before, that e-readers as we know them probably won't exist. You know, their marketing's very interesting. I saw a commercial recently where they were talking about sometimes you just want to read a book and you don't want all the other stuff. I think that's a desperate attempt to try and continue to sell the e-readers that they have, and I guess some people are still buying them, and I think they're great products, but it's hard to justify buying a e-reader like a Kindle Paperwhite or something like that when they're not that less expensive than buying the tablet, don't you think?
Exactly, but the funny thing is, you know, the Kindle Paperwhite is also by Amazon, so I guess they do still see, you know, a divergence in what people want,
Right.
And some people just do want the plain e-reader, but probably eventually those will be phased out at some point.
Yeah, I knew you were going to gravitate toward the gadget store as soon as I saw that. I thought, oh, I know what TJ is going to want to talk about first. But.
Well, yeah, and the thing is they have a new OS, which I think is way improved on the old one, because I played around with some Kindle Fires in the past, and I just wasn't as impressed with it as I thought I might be. But this actually looks a lot better. Seems like right. They finally got the hang of the people. If they are going to have a tablet, they do want to be able to get their email, and it looks like it's a much easier way of setting up and configuring. You can do Twitter on this. You can do Skype. And they also have a rear-facing camera on the larger model, and, you know, all of them come with a front-facing camera. And they have this thing called Mayday, where if you get stuck and you want some help, apparently you can go to the Mayday area and somebody from Amazon will do a video chat with you. And they can even take over on your tablet and show you
something. Wow.
Kind of like how they have been doing on a computer screen in the past. So that actually seems quite innovative.
Yes, that does. And, you know, one of the also the most important things that is obvious but we really haven't said is that CNET has really given these all these tablets very good reviews. They really like the direction that Amazon and the Kindle Fire tablet is going in. So all good, strong selling points that if you don't want to spend money on an iPad or iPad mini, there are some very attractive, more reasonably priced alternatives out there. And apparently Kindle's doing a good job of stepping up their game. So. Okay, and I know you would like to talk gadgets all day, but that would be a different podcast. So let's. I want to segue to. There's really two aspects of this podcast today that I think are really important. One, you'll probably notice if you look at our Digital Digest when we indicate the source, there's a lot of stories here where coming from Digital Book World, which basically is the rich man's version of, it's really more for the publishers and people who can afford it, you know, to spend $1,000 plus on going to a conference or a seminar of some sort. And, you know, so they really cater to the big publishing houses and other bigger development companies. And they did the 26th, so just yesterday, they did a marketing conference. And so there was a lot of stories coming as a result of different speakers they had. So that's why we have just plethora of Digital Book World articles. And we're going to get to those in a minute. But the first article I want to talk to, and these are important because they really focus a lot on marketing and technical metadata information and why that's so important. So we want to go quickly through all these articles because even if we can't afford to spend, you know, $1,000 plus to go there, we can, you know, definitely be the beneficiaries of what came out of that conference. And so that's what we want to do today. But before we get to that, I want to just focus a little bit on this article, Goodreads Growing Pains Attempt to Curtail Author Bullying Angers Many Users. What were your thoughts on this article, TJ?
Well, I think I agree that their practice is a good one because I hadn't thought about it. I mean, people can go and bash anything they want, and sometimes it's just not appropriate. And I do think that Goodreads, as the provider of the space, has the right to say that something is not appropriate and to delete it. What do you think?
Well, I think it's been a growing problem. It's been a problem on Amazon. It's a problem on Goodreads, and now Amazon owns Goodreads' problem since they just bought Goodreads. So they do have to kind of deal with this. And, you know, on one hand, there's people who, you know, are going to, you know, feel like they should be able to say whatever they want. And sometimes, you know, the vitriol just gets so ridiculous and personal, and it's completely inappropriate to what the experience should be in those communities, in my opinion. You know, you can say what you want about a book. I mean, it's not generally in my nature to, even with books I don't like, I don't generally, you know, bash books because, you know, somebody else may like it. You know, my opinion about what I may or may not like about a book is completely subjective. I personally find, not just in Amazon and Goodreads, But just in any type of community where you're allowed to make comments on any article, you know, that could be on yahoo.com or one of their online magazines or something like that, there always seems to be a group of people who just thrive on wanting to stir up problems that way. And to me, those are the people that somehow need to be, those sites need to be better moderated or flagged or reported in a way so that you can let, you know, Goodreads or Amazon deal with those people. And then other people get upset because, you know, a thread was started and then it's removed. And they see that as censorship. You know, it's kind of a no-win situation, but I just generally have a policy that I don't bash. And if I am involved in a thread where people start bashing, I just leave. I don't, you know, I don't entertain that. I don't enjoy it, and I don't think it's appropriate. And I certainly don't think it's professional. So,
well, basically, what I got from it is that Goodreads is saying if you're bashing an author just based on what they do, their behavior,
right,
that's what we're going to take down. If you're reviewing a book and you're really talking about the book and the content of the book, then they'll leave it. But yeah, just because somebody thinks a person is, you know, an author is a bad person or what they did was reprehensible and they write about it, I guess that's what Goodreads is saying is not appropriate. And they've got a point. It's not about the book, and Goodreads is about books.
You know, I took one of your tricks. I went and I looked at, you know, the comments on this particular article. And there were some really good, you know, balanced comments, you know. Like, you know, part of the problem is that there's such a problem with false and fake reviews that it creates this type of trolling type of atmosphere where somebody's intent on, you know, pointing the finger or, you know, exposing some author, whatever they may be doing. And, you know, I think there are people out there who, you know, probably rely on fictitiously generated likes and fans and all, you know. It's like I have so many people who endorse me on LinkedIn, and I have no idea why they're endorsing me. Now, some of the people I know, and I do pride myself on building relationships in social communities and stuff, but I know a lot of people do it just because they're hoping that I'm going to do the same back for them. And the fact of the matter is I don't endorse anybody unless I know them personally. You know, I don't think it really is helping me that somebody's doing that because everybody can see it for what it is, and that is you're just playing a numbers game. That's a problem as authors. We're all, you know, everybody's trying to do what everybody else is doing, and generally it doesn't work. And this will actually make a good segue into some of the marketing things we want to talk about. But one of the people commenting just said, look, if there's a problem, report it to Goodreads. Let them deal with it. If, you know, whether it's coming from the author itself, because there are authors who sometimes get people who will say, I didn't like your book, and they'll go on the attack too. It cuts both
right.
ways. This article just happens to focus on the fact that they feel like, that they feel like readers are coming after authors because for personal reasons. And then I guess there's been a couple specific instances where authors have just basically, you know, kind of shuttered their online presence and said, boom, I'm done with this. I think it does cut both ways. I don't think if you get a bad review of somebody that you should go on the attack, but I certainly don't think that people should be making, you know, saying personal things about authors when, you know, if you like the book, you like it. If you don't, you don't. But I do think bullying is a real problem. And I think there are a lot of authors out there who are really scared that there's these self-appointed police, you know, vigilante police squads out there ready to just tear them apart. You're aware of this too, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, somebody claims to be an authority on it and, you know, really, who are they, you know?
Mm-hmm. It just, all this stuff just kind of takes us away from the art of writing and the enjoyment of reading, and all of a sudden becomes about something else. You know, it's a little disappointing. But we definitely were aware of, it's never fun for somebody not to like your book. I've been very fortunate. I've gotten very little of that, fingers crossed. But, you know, but you have to be, you know, this is where, you know, no matter what type of artist you are, a writer, you know, sculptor, whatever, there's always going to be somebody who's not going to like something you did, and that's okay.
Sure.
And we all have to have a thick skin
about
that.
You have to be okay with that, absolutely.
But this other stuff, I really do think that there are people out there who just love pushing buttons and just love, and I would really like to see Goodreads or Amazon people cracking down on that type of behavior. That, to me, is the worst. So,
yeah.
Okay. Anything you want to add to that? Anything else from the article specifically you want to touch on?
Not that article, no.
Okay. Great. All right. Where are we going to go next, TJ?
Well, I kind of liked the article that talked about how Penguin has made another foray into going into the digital libraries. Apparently, they used to have a relationship with Overdrive, which we really love. Overdrive being an app that you can use on your iPhone, your iPad, and on your computer to check out books from your public library, if your library that you already belong to has a relationship with Overdrive. So anyway, we really like Overdrive, and Penguin eBooks had been off of their shelves for, I guess, the last year or two. But they've made the decision to come back to Overdrive, and now 17,000 eBooks are going to be available that weren't before. And I'm excited about that because, yeah, there's some books I search for in Overdrive, and I'm like, why isn't that even available? You know, and this is why, because there are certain publishers that just don't want to run the risk, I guess, of having their books being lent out for free.
Right.
So what did you think of it?
Well, I remember when Penguin actually removed itself from Overdrive, we were kind of just starting, you know, to do our, this particular podcast during the, up to speed in digital media news. Prior to that, we'd done mostly author interviews and things like that. But we really saw that there was a need. And so because when we started really researching, hey, what's going on in this, Overdrive was one of the first stories we did and that we really thought, hey, this is fantastic. And,
right.
You know, why don't more people know about this? And then no sooner had we kind of like, oh, been promoting Overdrive, then boom, Penguin and some others pulled out. And I don't remember exactly what it was. And if you notice, this story is really not an article, you know, journalism. It's a kind of press release from the company itself. Although I did see that, there isn't much to the story other than Penguin's coming back and they're bringing 17,000 e-books with them. But, you know, you can get connected for free with authors like Tom Clancy, Lee Child, Nora Roberts, Ken Follett, W.E.B. Griffin, and a lot of others. So that's a big deal. And to think that, you know, for people who are on a budget, you now have a way of accessing free ebooks for a limited period of time, you know, without spending a lot of money. So that's I think it's really great, and we're always happy to promote and support, you know, Overdrive and, you know, online libraries like that. So, you know, why we put it in there. And
It's interesting to note that the different publishers have different rules, you know. Some allow a library a certain amount of lendings before they require the library to buy a new copy. And
right.
And some say, we'll charge you a little more than retail, but you never have to buy another book. You know, it's just really interesting how different publishers write their own rules, really.
Yeah, they're still figuring out. I think this particular one is basically a one-for-one type thing, so they're doing it more like as if it's a physical library, which may be a deterrent for libraries themselves, but for wanting to, you know, just jump back in. You know, this article is not really written for us, like the consuming public. It's really written for libraries. Hey, we're back, you know,
yes.
You know, start getting our books again and stuff. So, but I think they're... I think that's great, and I would love to see everything, you know, available like this. This is, you know, what libraries are for, and, you know, this is important. So, all right, let's get to the talking about kind of as a whole rather than it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 6 articles from Digital Book World. One preceded the conference, and the rest are basically after, you know, kind of follow up to, hey, this is, you know, kind of the big news that came out of the conference. Now, there's a lot of stuff here that may seem foreign to non-technical, you know, authors and writers and publishers, and that's one of the reasons that digital book world is really focusing. I think the buzzword in this fourth quarter of 2013 and moving into 2014 is really you're going to be seeing a lot of these type of phrases, metadata, multi-channel marketing. You know, it's all going to be about marketing in a technical way. And it's about trying something, experimenting, and then assessing the numbers to see, based on those numbers, what is going to be the best way to build your relationships using technology and using the numbers from that. Does that make sense? Am I saying it in the right, or can you say it?
Yeah, I think you did a good job.
And metadata is, the easiest way to explain metadata is basically it's data about data. So whenever we have a website, within that website, there's information that is used to tell us about the website, and that sits behind. And so that's what the robots on Google look for. They look for metadata, and that's how they find us, and that's how they index our information and decide how web pages are ranked. Is that too simple an explanation, or is that about right?
It's about right.
Okay. That's really one of the things that publishers, as they become more technically savvy, as they bring people in to work with them, in order to, if we're all doing the same thing online and using social media in the same way, we don't know how effective we're being until we can really look into the data on who's visiting us, who's sticking with us, who's liking us, who's not liking us, things like that. Now, some of that information is skewed because of what we were just talking about before, that sometimes the metrics that we get, like on fan pages and likes and, who our friends are and stuff, sometimes that, as authors, that's not really accurate. Sometimes the targeted leads that we claim to have are not really targeted, and so it really comes down to that in building relationships with potential readership, they have to be legitimate and they have to be authentic to really measure the data to see what is going to be most effective for us in building that audience. And I know it sounds like it's a circular definition and we're kind of chasing our tail a little bit here, but that's one of the reasons why it's really important that we move away from some of the practices of, hey, will you like me? Hey, will you do this? And that we really are making connections with people, that even if it's a smaller audience, when it comes to marketing, it's better to market to an audience of 1,000 people who are really interested than to market to an audience of 100,000 people who really don't care at all. It's okay to start small and really build that audience and then build relationships with those people. That's kind of as a grouping of articles, that's kind of what my takeaway from it was. What do you think, TJ?
I agree. There's a lot of information here, and some of it is a little like what? A little mumbo-jumbo-y.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do spend some time, it does make sense, and I think they do a really good job of saying how important this is to do. And collecting the data is what's so important, and then doing a good analysis of it. So like they were saying, are you giving away books or free chapters? Then collect data on how many you gave away, to whom, and in what period of time. So they're just saying, whatever you do, make sure you look back at it and analyze it and then say, did it work, didn't it work, and why,
Right. Yeah, you can't just do this stuff in a vacuum. I'm not a big fan of the giveaway. I've always said that. I am a big fan of asking people to take my book and read it and give me feedback. That's not exactly the same as a giveaway because my intention in doing that is to get feedback from it so that I can change or alter it or revise it and then re-release it on a new improved version of it. That's different. When people do a giveaway, it's with no intention of updating content. It's really hopefully you're going to give me my book, you're going to like it, and you're going to buy it from me. And I don't know that that really works really well unless you're already a known entity. Some people, I'm sure, have had great success with it. I don't happen to know any of those people, but, that remains to be seen. But you may find some words in here that are not going to be really familiar, like what channel management is or you know, multi-channel approach. There's a term that they use now called agile marketing. And what agile marketing basically means is old traditional marketing used to be you did a press release, you did this, you did a book signing, you did, you know, all the things that everybody does. And, you know, basically, if it's a good book, it was going to sell. That didn't necessarily work very well anymore. And so instead of creating a firm plan that says we're going to execute, in, you know, with a big budget and we're going to do this, this, and this, and boom, you know, everything should be taken care of, is what you have to do is you kind of have to be more experimental. You have to try something, test it out, see how it works, measure the data on it, the feedback you've gotten from it, and if that works, continue on a little bit more. But if it doesn't, you're not attached to any long-term plan that will yield nothing in return and may end up costing you more. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I use email marketing for all of our business, for both of our businesses. But for me, it makes sense because the cost, what it costs me to, and not just email marketing, other forms of, you know, direct mail and you know, we've done this for years. But it only takes us one or two customers to pay for the cost of that marketing expense. As a author, if you're selling a product that's based somewhere between 99 cents or, you know, on average $2.99, and you're trying to do these other bigger campaigns, you have to look at how many books am I going to have to sell in order to recoup that several thousand dollars it cost me to do the campaign. And that can tell you right there, that's not a good approach. You're going to end up owing more than you're ever going to possibly make unless you're, you know, trying to grab the brass ring, win the lottery or something like that. So I really like the concept of agile marketing. And agile marketing is really about trying something, see how it works out, and it's really about connecting directly with the readers and having that audience. So that readership then becomes your best marketing tool, which is word of mouth. And, you know, the more that they feel connected to you as an author and authentically follow you, not just putting a like on your page because it makes it look like you, you know, have more friends than you do, then, you know, you're on a better path to success. Thoughts?
Right, and they talk about how it's really about responding to the change that you encounter
right
along the way. So it's like you do start out with a plan, but then depending on what happens, then you change it, you know?
Right. I mean, I kind of tongue-in-cheek put one of the images I used on the digest under the article that says, do you have a budget for marketing experimentation? It's like, you know, those little placards they put on the floor when it's wet, you know, like be careful instead of, you know, like wet floor. It says market testing because that's kind of how it is. And that's how it was, you know, 15 years ago when TJ and I were starting off that, you know, it's always just a test. You know, you don't dive in with both feet. You kind of stick your big toe in and test the water first and then kind of ease in from there. And so everything that authors do to sell books, you know, if you're doing exactly what everybody else is doing and you're doing what everybody did 10 years ago, it's almost a guaranteed recipe for not being successful. And so I think there's a lot of great information here. Some of the terms will become more familiar to you the more that you challenge yourself to really familiarize yourself. Like, you got to figure this stuff out or you're going to get lost, you know, lost in the sea of independent books. So you need to stand out. You got to figure out the technology behind some of this stuff. So anything else you want to add?
No, I think we covered a good part of it.
Okay. All right. And by the way, all those articles are pretty short, easy to kind of get through, and they have some charts in there that also help make it more understandable. I guess there's just the one last article. Why don't you take that one?
Regarding Jeff Bezos?
Yes.
Yeah, I kind of like this little article. He was just talking about how it's the owner of the rights, the quote-unquote rights holders, who call the shots on whether or not they want DRM, encoding on their books. And and so Jeff Bezos is just saying, we do what they want because they're the owner of the rights anyway. It's not our decision at Amazon. What was your takeaway from that?
Well, you know, digital right management is always going to be an ongoing debate, never going to go away, and I don't think DRM is going to go away. I think some people feel that Amazon could make it go away if they basically just did not allow it. And they're basically not, they're going to remain neutral on it and say, you know, it's up to the individual artist and writer if they want to control their, you know, I think they're afraid if they take it out that, you know, they could see an exodus of people, you know, wanting the platform. So they're neutral on it. It's like, if you want it, you can have it. If you don't, you don't. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. And that's a separate discussion away from, you know, whether or not DRM should even exist in new, you know, technologies like HTML5. And so it's just this isn't really, there's no conclusive right or wrong on this. It's more of like, this is just another little blip in the ongoing DRM debate. For or against doesn't really matter. It's just good to know, you know, why things happen, why people take the positions that they do. I'm kind of an open source type of gal. I don't really like DRM, but I understand and I respect that, you know, people want to protect themselves. But I just think that the more open we can keep the web, the better. And do you feel that way too?
I do. One thing I also wanted to just mention about this article is he was talking about how, you know, people are upset that they can't just lend a book to a friend. And, you know, they're like, I bought it. I now own it. I should be able to lend it to a friend when I'm done. Well, you know, so he just says, well, what he's done in his family is just set up one account and they purchase all their books and media through that. And then everybody in their family can just log on with that one account.
Yeah. And it was so funny about that. It's like, Jeff Bezos has to buy his own books, really? That's the funniest part to me. Like, do I really believe that? Okay, fine. But I do think that's the correct thing, that you have a family account and everybody has access to that. And, you know, same thing with, you know, whether you have Netflix or, you know, you don't go and put your private password here and, you know, the stuff you use for, you know, your banking and stuff. That, I hope not. I hope people aren't using the same username and password for their online banking that they use on their Netflix. If they are, that's a bad idea. So,
right.
But, yeah, there should be certain, like, family access passwords, username and passwords. And, you know, that's, you can have your own Amazon account and you can have a collective one that everybody can access. And that's probably the easiest strategy to use in that respect. So,
great.
All right. Okay. Well, another interesting week in digital media news. And it's fun to kind of, you know, kind of getting our sea legs back again. So, yeah, I enjoy our discussions always. So, and a quick reminder about the Wise Bear Digital Book Awards again. WiseBearMedia.com /awards for all information, or feel free to contact us at our site. We have a phone number there, although nobody generally calls anymore, but you can always shoot us an email through our online contact form and we respond as quickly as we possibly can. Thanks, TJ, and we'll do this again next week, right?
Absolutely.
Great, and pretty soon we're going to start inviting other authors to be guest co-hosts with us, because it's always good to get that third fresh eye, you know, third opinion. Love to have fresh eyes on these different topics as well. So, all right, thanks to all of our social media fans and friends for listening and spreading the word about us and supporting our show. Tell your friends about us. Up to speed in digital media news with Quinn Barrett and TJ Hume. And we're here to help you kind of figure out some of this technological babble that a lot of authors don't understand. So until next week, everybody have a great weekend and just keep writing.